This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning, everybody. How are you today? Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you. And a thank you to L. Oppelman's for supporting us. They are Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender and Peavey. Also available, it's complete drum sets. You can find L. Oppelman at 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. Online, it's loppelman.com. All right, thank you for being here with us today. I'm going to throw out the number early because it's a call-in show to speak with our guest. And who is our guest today? Oh, it's Dr. Feats.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. So
especially
nice
on
to be here.
A holiday weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's nice. It's a little muggy outside, so you come in where the air conditioning's working.
Yep.
Is this kind of a charged visit for Lazarus? I brought him along.
Yeah. It'll slightly discounted, but we'll work it out after.
Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Dr. Mike Feats from the Georgetown Veterinary Clinic here in Charlottesville on, surprisingly, Georgetown Road. We are going to take calls about your vet pet questions. Dial us up. We expect it to be so crazy we have both Jen and Sean here to answer the phones. 979-0919. That's 979-0919. The toll-free number, because you can call us throughout the state, throughout the country, throughout the world. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And there goes a call right there. Maybe they're throughout the world. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS and 979-0919. All right, Dr. Feats, quick question while we wait for the caller to get through. I had a question from a friend. Is it okay to declaw a cat? A cat that spends most of its time indoors.
Is it okay to declaw a cat? It's something we try not to do unless it's absolutely necessary. It is a traumatic procedure for the cat, and I do try and do them as little often as absolutely needed. I do have cases occasionally where it's either that or a homeless cat if the cat is being unduly destructive, and so we try to make allowances when necessary, but it's certainly something we try to avoid unless it's really needed.
And a little more information on when it's needed. I mean, destroying the inside of the home.
Well, I mean, if it's to the point where an owner is about to, you know, make that cat homeless, then, you know, in my opinion, it's better to go through with that procedure than end up with another cat in the shelter system. But it's certainly something we shy away from. Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
We're also listening, folks, on Harrisonburg's 95.1. So give us a call there again, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And our first call today is from Julie in Whitehall. Hey, Julie.
Hi.
Question for Dr. Feats.
Yes, sir. I have a dog that for a while now, she's been, the only way I can describe her actions is it's like she's smacking her lips, you know. She opens and shuts her mouth and kind of a type of thing, and I've noticed that after she'd been doing that for a little while, that she starts getting these crusties around the edges of her lips, and I'm wondering if that could be a tooth problem.
It could, and it's tough with things like this because those sorts of lip smacking and those kinds of behaviors can be associated with so many different things. Certainly teeth are one of the first things we look at. Dogs may do that if they have other gastrointestinal issues. But what you've seen with the licking and then it wets their lips and it can get them all chafed and crusty, that's common. And some breeds will have deeper folds in the lips around the mouth and that can make them crust up worse. But it's certainly something to get checked out. If it is the teeth, then it's possible that a procedure can get the dog comfortable again and you'll kind of kill a few birds with one stone. Yes, it definitely could be the teeth.
So it could be gastrointestinal, too?
It could, in the absence of other symptoms. I mean, as long as the dog's not throwing
that,
up.
That could make sense.
Yeah.
She licks herself a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, and she's swollen. And this has been going on for like a year, and she had anal sac
sure.
problems. But, yeah, the vet just said she was doing that like a year ago, and she went because she was neurotic. And
well, and it could be that. I mean, dogs that lick themselves a lot, unfortunately, neurosis
not so much
is on the
licking,
list.
But the mouth smacking. But she didn't used to have the crusties along the side of her mouth when she first started doing that. That came a few months ago.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, and that's neurosis is certainly on the list as far as things that may cause a dog to do that, whether it's directly causing it or secondary to her licking elsewhere is tough to know. But
yeah, she's high strung. I got to get her to the vet. It's an hour away, so I hadn't got the appointment set yet. But they all three need to go. So
gotcha.
I appreciate your help.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey, Julie, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Dr. Feetz, we talk about dogs licking. I see I brought Lazarus with me today. Again, I'll probably have multiple questions to take advantage of your time here.
Sure.
And I see Lazarus is actually licking the carpet, which is not exactly the cleanest spot here in WNRN. What do you think he sees or smells?
Well, that kind of goes in the same category as what we just dealt with. I mean, sometimes dogs are licking at the floor because something tastes good there. Other times it does become a bit of a neurotic behavior, and we can see it just because of that as a purely behavioral thing. We can see it in dogs that do have some kind of GI problem. We're often left supposing a little bit. You know, we'll think about dogs having...
He's not the best communicator.
He really isn't. You know, we'll see dogs, you know, we have to assume these things a little bit. You know, a person can go to the doctor and report that they have heartburn. We assume that dogs deal with things like reflux and so on, and they may be attempting to swallow more in order to counter it. But there's a little bit of guesswork, and there's a little bit of taking that dog's personality into account when we look at problems like that.
By the way, as I joke about Lazarus, Dr. Feetz does see Lazarus on a regular basis along with Dr. Peppard at Georgetown Veterinary Clinic. Dr. Mike Feetz in here today. Call us up with your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dr. Feetz, with Julie's question, we got a little bit on the dental problem.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about dental issues for dogs.
Sure. Sure. I mean, they have teeth just like we do, and they suffer similar problems that we do. We're, again, left assuming a little bit. You know, we see a dog come in with, or a cat come in with any degree of dental disease, and we assume they suffer with it the same way we do. They may not complain about it as vocally, and very rarely do I see an animal stop eating because of it. So it's hard to interpret them. We have to look at the teeth and the condition of the gums and assume that they're suffering discomfort or outright pain, depending on the degree of it.
We also take instant messages here at NRN WNRN Studio on AOL.com. Here's one following up on this topic. I have a 4-year-old bulldog mix. We've been to the vet for dental work and were given a toothbrush and the doggy toothpaste afterwards, but she doesn't like me brushing her teeth. Is there a special way to do it? I know it's important.
Yeah, there's not a special way to do it, and I hate giving such a vague answer, but frequently it's whatever works, and it's a tough position for people to be in. We always do recommend brushing their teeth, and if you can do it every day or two, that's really ideal. Less than that, you start getting diminishing returns on what you're putting in. But some dogs really do make it difficult, and you know, while it is important, I don't begrudge people who have really given it a shot and just are unable to do it. I have a lot of trouble brushing my own dog's teeth, so this is not, there's no magic trick to doing it. You know, you want to try and make it as positive and pleasant as you can. I know that can be difficult, you know, whether you incorporate it into a play session or have something happy be a reward for doing it as opposed to just being a wrestling match for a few minutes every so often.
Are there some dogs or breeds that are more accepting of whether it's, is it the taste of the toothpaste? Well, is it the method of sticking something in their mouth?
It can be, and it'll vary dog to dog. I mean, there may be breed tendencies, but there's so much variety from dog to dog. Some dogs sit there and very happily allow you to brush their teeth. Others really do make it a trick. So, yeah, you end up having to go dog to dog. Certainly, in cases where you start doing it when they're puppies, it's a little bit easier if they get used to it and just have that be part of their life. It's a little tougher if you're attempting to introduce that to a dog that's not used to having it done.
All right, call us with your question. Thanks, Gene. Gene19 for the bulldog question about the dental brushing of the teeth. Yeah, Lazarus doesn't like that much. But then again, Lazarus had like teeth pulled in February and April earlier this year.
I'm not sure how many he's got left at this stage.
He came to me that way. I'm not taking all the blame on that. 979-0919-1877 WNRN Rocks, WNRN Studio at AOL, if that's your instant message. That's thanks from Julie and Gene19 for our questions to get us going. Dr. Feetz, Georgetown Veterinary Clinic has three vets?
Four.
Four vets?
Uh-huh.
How do you pick a vet? I mean, typically if you're taking your child to see a doctor,
right. You're
maybe getting some information from friends, but you can tell very early on whether you want to go back to that vet
for
the relationship that either you have or that has with your kid.
Sure.
But how do you have a relationship with the dog? And so how does the owner, the human, pick the vet?
I kind of assume that's up to them. I think there is a lot of difference from veterinarian to veterinarian. Even at our hospital, we have different vets, and one client may feel that they or their pet does better with one than another, and I think there's a lot of personal preference involved. But I think the process is very similar to how people choose a doctor, physician, dentist, any other medical profession. I think, you know, for those people, perhaps there's a little bit of trial and error. They certainly rely on what their friends tell them, and otherwise, you know, when people come in, we try and make it as pleasant and painless as possible for both the owner and the pet. And
are there specialties? Each vet has a specialty or something that you feel more comfortable or capable doing? I mean, is it dog versus cat, or are there problems with whichever animal it might be?
No, not directly. I mean, we don't have specific specialties per se at our hospital. There are veterinarians that do specialize, and we, with some frequency, find ourselves sending animals to specialists, whether it be for, you know, a particularly complicated eye problem or orthopedic surgery, things like that. Within the hospital, I think, any given veterinarian may have things they like doing and things that they particularly excel at, and I don't think we're shy about bouncing things off each other at the hospital. So there's certainly a bit of a collaborative piece to it, and we don't always go into cases alone. I think we do bounce things off of the other veterinarians at the hospital.
11:12 here on the Wake Up Call. Feel free to call us in with your questions. Our guest today, Dr. Mike Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Clinic here in Charlottesville. Pet questions for the vet, ring us up, 979-0919. That's the local number, 979-0919. Toll free, it's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Send us an instant message at WNRN Studio. Let me thank the Backyard for their support. UVA Corners Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue, welcoming back the students. Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. Backyard now open on Sundays, serving brunch, and then a pub food menu until close. For more info, you can call them at 202-8215 and thebackyarduva.com. You can find them on Facebook. All right, Dr. Feetz, question related to, I guess, our original caller, Julie, said something about her dog licking or constantly licking its lips.
Sure.
I know that other dogs have problems where, and I think it's called a hot spot, where they lick a particular spot on the leg, et cetera, until it gets, does it get dangerously contaminated? Or
They can. I mean, most of them are mild things and very easy to treat. You know, when we refer to hot spots, that makes it sound like a more specific thing than it is. A hot spot can start in a lot of different ways, really anything that draws an animal's attention to a particular area and gets them licking at it. And then the problem is that the licking can cause even more irritation, which makes it itch and hurt, and then it makes them lick at it more, and you just end up in this snowball. Typically treating it just involves treating the infection that they've created at that spot and finding some way to keep them from licking at it, which is usually just breaking whatever inflammation and pain is there, and usually they resolve very easily. But they can get frustrating. Some of them can get very deeply embedded and take a long time to treat if the dog's been going at it for a long time.
I had a friend who said that the way to fix it for her dog was mm-hmm. that she sprayed clove oil on it. I mean, finding something that the dog does not like
yeah.
that also doesn't contaminate the sore spot.
Yeah, if you're stepping in early enough and they haven't really rubbed that skin terribly raw, you can get away with things like that, things that are unpleasant for them to lick and just deter them from doing it. As the skin starts to get more raw, that can get irritating. So it depends on what stage we're at and what the underlying reason is.
All right, here's another question that I had before I came in today from a friend. Asked me to ask you this. My cat's 14 and jumps less than he used to, so we lowered the food bowl from a shelf to the floor, but he still meows more than he used to. And Fred said, someone else said to get him checked for arthritis.
Sure. Cats, as they age, become arthritic, just as people and dogs do. To some extent, managing that is exactly what this person's doing already, which is making the home more accessible for that cat. A lot of these cats just can't jump like they used to, and you need to respect that to an extent. There's a few things that help, honestly, environmental manipulation may be the most important when it comes to cats. Trying to keep them exercising is important. As any animal gets older and they're not exercising as much, their muscles just atrophy with disuse, and that can compound arthritic pain. So trying to keep these cats active is important. That's not necessarily easy to do. I know you can't just take a cat out for a run like you can with a dog, but you can try and interact with them more, keep them moving. We do find ourselves at a bit of a disadvantage with cats when it comes to medical management of arthritis. We don't quite have the same variety of choices in dealing with it as we do in people and in dogs. So there's a bit of a trick to it, but cats do benefit from being lighter framed, and so they're not hanging as much weight on those joints as they age.
But isn't that mm-hmm. a similar percentage of weight? I mean, mm-hmm. Even though the cat only weighs
sure.
12 pounds.
Sure. It is a similar percentage, and it does scale to an extent. But in general, cats deal better with arthritis than dogs do. And that varies. Again, we see a lot of obesity in animals, and that complicates arthritis. So certainly an overweight cat is going to struggle with it more than a lighter framed cat. So there's a lot of factors that contribute to it, certainly.
And you talk about keeping the cat active.
Mm-hmm.
Are at what point does it become, instead of being active, to some sort of medication, or is there a medication you can do for that?
Sure. And often, I don't like to use medication as a means unto itself. Certainly, especially in dogs, we have a lot of medical options, fewer in cats, but we do still have options for them that can resolve some of the discomfort. And while that's important in its own right, what we're really hoping to do is ease the discomfort so that animal can exercise more and can get around. I've had a lot of animals where, we use that medication temporarily, just until the animal has exercised enough and has gotten themselves back in enough shape. And often we can taper those medications down and get them back to normal, sometimes without any kind of medical support.
Well, why are there fewer medicines for cats? Is that because they won't sit still long enough
no.
to try anything?
So the mainstay of arthritis management in dogs and for a long time in people has been the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, drugs that are at this point distant, but still cousins of things like aspirin and Tylenol. Cats, just by their nature and physiology, have a lot of trouble with those drugs. This is one of the reasons, things that we think of as over-the-counter for people can actually be very toxic for cats. And that entire class of drugs needs to be used very judiciously in cats. Their livers process it differently, and they can actually get themselves in trouble using them.
All right, Dr. Mike Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Clinic. I have plenty of my questions, but let's take some of yours. 979-0919-1877-WN1. WNRN Rocks. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly sunny morning with mostly cloudy, but a 30% chance of showers today. Highs in the mid-80s. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers tonight. Lows in the upper 60s. And then tomorrow for Labor Day, mostly cloudy, 90% chance of showers, a little less so in Richmond. Tomorrow, highs 75 to 80, even warmer in the Richmond area. Right now, it's pretty nice out there, a little muggy, 79 in the valley, 80 in Lynchburg, 78 in Richmond, 75 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support for WNRN today also coming from Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce your household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep the planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. You can find them at DixonDisposal.com. All right, I see the phone ringing. We'll get that call in just a sec. That's the local number, 9790191. What the hell did I just say? Try the toll-free number at 9877-WNRN-ROCKS. For some reason, all the numbers in my life have become a jumble all of a sudden. Not that that's really that rare. I have a lot of jumble issues. I love asking this question every time you're on, Dr. Feetz. Why do dogs drag their butt across the grass?
This one does come up every time.
It's just an interesting image that I have.
I don't know if interesting is the right word. So they do that because they're itchy. And there's a pretty small number, but frequent number of reasons they might do that. Sometimes it's just a temporary itch. Sometimes it's allergy-related. Perhaps the most common reason is trouble with the sacs that are on each side of their rear end. And basically, they're scent glands, and they fill up with fluid, and they can block up and cause some discomfort. And a lot of dogs are just dragging their rear ends in order to relieve that discomfort.
Does that remove the problem, or should I take my dog or to the vet?
More often than not, it doesn't remove the problem. It makes them feel temporarily better. Usually, it's a good idea to give us a call and see if we don't need to take care of that.
All right, that last call left me a note. So the phone line is open, 979-0919. Got that right this time. 979-0919. Toll-free is 877-WNRN-ROCKS here with Dr. Mike Feetz from Charlottesville's Georgetown Veterinary Clinic. Let's see. Talk about Lyme's disease. Mm-hmm. When is vaccine recommended? And if they've been treated, how long until they need to be put on IV?
On IV. So Lyme's disease, it's the same disease that people get, same bug causing it. It's spread by ticks. And dogs are susceptible to it. It's very common in the area. I probably diagnose Lyme's disease several times a week.
Really?
Yeah, it's very common. But there's a bit of an asterisk to that. Most dogs that I'm diagnosing are being diagnosed well before they have symptoms. It's something that we screen for routinely, annually. And we catch most of them before these dogs get sick. Lyme's behaves a little bit differently in dogs than it does in people. And most cases, I don't want to say all because there are some that are nasty, most cases wind up being fairly mild and easily addressed. There are animals that get sick enough from Lyme's disease that they might need to be hospitalized on IVs. I'm assuming that's what the owner was getting at, the caller. But the vast majority do not. Most of them go on a fairly simple course of an antibiotic and things improve. There was mention of the vaccine. The vaccine is available, and there's debate on how effective it is, and that's something you should discuss with your own veterinarian depending on the prevalence of the disease in that area and what the perceived risks and benefits are. But in most hospitals, I think I can say most, that's not part of core vaccines. That's not part of the vaccines that we just as a rule give to dogs.
1-877-979-0919. I see that line's ringing. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Our guest today, Dr. Mike Feetz from Charlottesville's Georgetown Veterinary Clinic. Questions for the vet about your pet? You were talking about Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. I know that there's at least two, if not three, different treatments, sort of like the, you know, and I use Frontline
right.
for Lazarus, but it's the monthly treatment where
sure.
you put the whatever the
that liquid,
the
yeah.
liquid, thank you, on the back of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Are they different? By the way, phone lines ringing, guys. Are they different in some way? Or are they just different? Names.
No, they are different. They're all different medications, and you know, depending on an individual case, a given owner might find that one works better or worse for their pet.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up question from someone is, do cats get Lyme disease?
Cats are resistant to Lyme disease.
So
in general,
why is that?
No. Just some quirk of their biology, I assume.
Mm-hmm. I asked you if there are different types of with the Frontline versus the alternatives. What's the alternative in case I don't want to get sued?
There's a bunch of them. Advantix is another one, and so there's a few on the market. Right. Yeah.
Just so I don't get picked upon for picking one type. Is the same thing work for the heartworm disease? I mean, we know that there are two mm-hmm. or three or plus mm-hmm. versions of that as well. Do they do things in a different manner so that
yeah.
your breed or your weight dog might be better served by one versus the other?
By and large, no. I don't want to say that as a complete blanket rule. There might be weird exceptions here and there if a given dog is reacting to a particular drug. There are a variety of products on the market for these things, and all of them do work in their own different ways. Very often, these individual products have their own list of pros and cons as far as what they cover, what they don't cover, what they're better at, what they're worse at. So to some extent, you know, we make those recommendations based on that individual dog, what kind of life they live, and what sorts of things they're likely to be exposed to.
I see the phone line ringing again. We're getting a lot of calls. People just don't want to come on the air. Believe me, your voice doesn't sound any worse than mine. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Sean or Jen will answer the phone. You're welcome to leave your question anonymously, but we'd love to have you come on the air and ask Dr. Feetz yourself, Mike Feetz from Charlottesville's Georgetown Vet Clinic. Are dogs allergic to cats?
They can be.
And what is the, you know, when I, Lazarus is every dog, just like every person, has their mm-hmm. genetic weak spot.
Sure.
Aside from being beaten by the bear, Lazarus's weak spot seems to be his ears.
Yeah.
He loves to scratch his ears, but almost in a frantic way. And it seems to get worse when we go hang out at my friend's place where the cats are.
Sure.
But they don't get red, you know, like a human would
yeah.
get sort of that the rash. He doesn't seem to have that. But he definitely scratches the crap out of his ears much more often and much more frequently.
Yeah, I mean, allergies are a common problem in dogs in general, and I always sympathize for owners dealing with it. There's very rarely a tidy solution for allergies. In dogs that are severe enough where we do get around to running allergy panels, cats are among the most common things I see on those panels. I very often see dogs allergic to cats, and it's entirely possible that Lazarus has that kind of allergy. Lazarus, who is currently sleeping very, very placidly by my side, has had skin problems recently, and they may well be due to underlying allergies, and those can be frustrating because they can be allergic to so many different things. Apart from cats, they have the same sorts of allergy profiles that we do. They'll be allergic to grasses and molds and pollens, and it can be very frustrating because you can't really shield them from the environment.
Yeah, and they don't speak up as to when it's bothering them because you did this versus that.
Yeah, not as loudly as we'd like sometimes. Some dogs, and Lazarus is certainly among them, are very stoic, and you're left interpreting pretty subtle cues.
Stoic. I like that. Lazarus mm-hmm. likes that as well. We got a call from is this Joseph. Joseph, are you with me?
Yeah, this is Joseph speaking.
Hey, Joseph. Question for Dr. Feetz.
Yes, I have a question about a cat that I own by the name of Sully. He seems to have really bad ulcers in his mouth.
Uh-huh.
And it started on his lips, and I can see, like, in the back of his throat where they're starting to form more.
Okay.
Is there a way that, some kind of treatment or anything that we can do to, is there a name for this?
Well, it depends a little bit. You know, the two most common things that leap to mind, some cats are prone to just oral ulcers, and those, if that's what it is, can frequently be controlled medically, so it's worth getting it checked out. I don't know how old Sully is, but another unfortunately common reason for ulcers in the mouth in cats, they can be secondary to kidney disease, which is very common in cats. And that's something you'll want to get checked out. So most likely, you know, you'll end up checking some blood work, making sure his kidneys are doing what they need to do. If these are just primary ulcers in the mouth, and don't get me wrong, those can be frustrating, but those are often very medically manageable. If it's secondary to kidney disease, that's also to some degree medically manageable. Not quite as directly as something like oral ulcers would be, but
last question is it temporary? Will the cat have it forever? Or is there like some life-threatening thing that gets spread to other organs?
Oh well, if it's related to kidney disease, then it's a bigger problem. If they're primary ulcers in the mouth, they can certainly be a nuisance throughout the cat's life, but those are typically manageable. You know, usually you wrestle them under control medically, and the cat does great for a while. Sometimes they'll flare up now and then, but in that case, it may be a lifelong nuisance, but nothing that's a major health hazard unless it progresses to the point that, you know, he goes off food and things like that.
Okay, and the last question I guess is, and I'll make this really fast.
Sure.
There's no real homeopathic way to rid him or kind of ease his, because it seems to bother him quite a bit.
Sure, nothing that I'd recommend offhand, particularly without knowing exactly what the cause is for him.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Ciao.
All right, Joseph. Thanks for the call. And Sully, I really thank you for bringing that plane down safely. Good job. 979-0919 for our callers. That's the local number, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks, 1131 on the wake-up call. Taking a pet questions for our vet today, Dr. Mike Feetz, Georgetown Veterinary Clinic here in Charlottesville. Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. You can find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in Charlottesville at Barracks Road and three locations in Richmond. You're encouraged to be kind, have fun, and do the right thing by Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. For more store information, it's brms.com. All right, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks, WNRN Studio on the AOL Instant Message Board. Dr. Feetz, question from Charles. His old dog has lumps under his skin. Local vet says they're benign.
Mm-hmm.
Can these cause problems?
For the most part, no. Depending on how they've been checked, usually you can just rest assured that they are benign and not a big problem. Many dogs, as they get older, will develop fatty lumps under the skin. Those are benign and are not of any major concern unless they grow so big or happen to grow in a spot that makes the dog uncomfortable, which is rare. Those can be removed if needed, but usually they don't need to be. There are other kinds of skin tumors dogs can get, the vast majority of which do turn out to be benign, but some can be a problem. So we do recommend checking each one as it pops up and just make sure that it's not something that needs to be addressed.
What would cause that? I mean, is that just
part
of the dog aging? No different than like... what do you call it when you get the dark spots on your skin as you become a senior citizen, et cetera?
It to some extent is their version of that. They, especially larger breed dogs, as they get older, I mean, some of them come in and there's more lump than dog at that point. There's just masses everywhere. And so long as they're not making the dog uncomfortable, they're of no concern to me. Most of them are just benign fatty deposits. They are tumors, technically. We call them lipomas, but they're benign tumors. They're typically not invasive or destructive, and in almost no case do they metastasize to other organs. So while they might be unsightly, they're not of any concern to the dog.
Answer me a couple questions on the dog aging.
Sure.
At what point does a dog, and I realize it's a lot to do with size, but at what point does a dog become a senior, and what are some of the behavioral signs that go with that?
Yeah, well, you're right. It does to some extent link to dog size. Larger dogs age faster, unfortunately. Smaller dogs tend to go longer before they start showing signs of age. They vary. Arthritis is among the most common, and a lot of dogs start getting achy, and they don't move quite the way they used to. We see a lot of old age problems in dogs. Dogs can suffer cognitive dysfunction and dementia the same way humans can. And
really?
Yeah. And it often, you know, it'll manifest in strange ways. A lot of people will just see their old dogs acting quirky. Sometimes it's very, very pronounced.
What if you have a quirky dog?
Well, sometimes they're just quirky. but I'll have people come in, you know, the dog just sits in front of a wall and stares at it for an hour. I mean, you know, sometimes spooky things. You know, that's all part of these dogs getting older. And one of the challenges as dogs age is separating aging from illness. And that can be difficult. You know, a lot of the things that do come with age are due to illness. You know, things like arthritis, well, we can to some extent write off and say, well, he's getting older. I mean, arthritis is a disease in and of its own right. It may be a disease that's close to universal to older dogs, but that doesn't change the fact that it's an abnormality that animal needs to contend with. You know, likewise, cognitive dysfunction is a disorder, even if it's common in these dogs as they get older. And then, you know, the older they get, the more prone they are to other problems, underlying problems, be it liver disease, kidney disease, cancers, you name it. And it does take some vigilance on the part of owners to just spot symptoms early and see what needs to be done about it.
Is there a way, though, to... I mean, I think everyone can Google these days.
Sure.
So if you know the general size of your dog, mm-hmm. is there, and so then you can Google to see what its expected life term is. Is there a percentage of its way through the life? If Lazarus is expected to be a 14-year-old dog,
right.
Is it at 7 or is it at 10 or is it at 12? What percentage of the way through his
sure.
life? And I realize I'm not asking you to tell
sure,
me this
sure,
as
sure.
the, you know, put it in,
right.
you know, in marker so that that's what's going to be.
No, I think, you know, to some extent I would follow the same rule that people would follow. I mean, I hate to use a cliche and say it's a state of mind, but you let the dog guide you in that regard, or you let the cat guide you in that regard. You know, when they start seeming old, they're old. And, you know, when it comes to dogs, it can be very strange. My first dog, who lived to just about 16, really acted pretty puppy-like until he aged all at once, right around the age of 13 and 14. So with some, it seems to come very quickly. And, you know, whether or not I would refer to a given dog as being a senior probably has more to do with their behavior and overall appearance than their actual numerical age.
979-0919. Dial us up with your questions about your pet for Dr. Mike Feetz, Georgetown Veterinary Clinic here in Charlottesville. Cats, dogs, somebody earlier said horses.
You'll probably want to keep it with cats and dogs. Yeah, I'm 8 years out of vet school. I don't remember much about horses.
979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'll get to being a sort of a younger pet in a moment, but... as dogs age, we're sort of talking about the senior dogs here for a moment, and behavioral aspects, but what about what we feed them and how we talked earlier about arthritis is making sure they're active.
Sure.
But my understanding is from, again, I don't want to give Lazarus too much of a percentage of the show, but that's my, that's my knowledge, is that we had to switch him to a different food because the, not a different food, but a different style of food. We went
sure.
from sort of the regular dog to the senior
to a
dog
senior
food
diet.
Because it, the way it works, and I just did it. I don't necessarily understand it.
Sure. You know, to some extent, a lot of it is just a reflection of changed behavior in those dogs as they get older. I mean, older dogs tend to be less active. They don't necessarily require as many calories to get through a day. So some of it's as simple as that. A lot of the senior diets are supplemented with things like glucosamine and so on that are thought perhaps to help with things like arthritis. Whether they do or not could probably fill four shows. At the same time, I wouldn't want to overstate the importance of those dietary changes. And a lot of these dogs dogs, they probably do fine regardless of whether they stayed on a standard issue adult maintenance diet versus a senior one. You know, whether it has that much of an impact is debatable. Older dogs may, though, have other medical conditions that do justify specific types of diets. You know, an animal with kidney disease or liver disease may do better on a different diet. So that may reflect the given problems going on with the dog at that point.
11:39 here on the Wake Up Call. Dial us up with your question, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, earthquakes and hurricanes. The Hook experts provide some fancy tips for whatever comes up next. A week after our earthquake, the Nuclear Regulatory Committee sent a specialized team to inspect the still-closed North Anna power plant. But the inspection might not uncover the risk of contaminated drinking water, according to some. And was the officer texting while driving just before hitting that citizen in a wheelchair? The Hook. Read all about it with Never a Finance Charge. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746, online brgtshirts.com. Our guest today, Dr. Mike Feetz, call him up with your question about your pet, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. You can also send me another instant message, WNRN Studio, on the AOL site. Here's a question from the instant message side, Dr. Feetz. Lately lost my dog. Do you have suggestions for people who lose their animal, either expectedly or unexpectedly?
Yeah, and I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not clear from the description what lost means in this case, if it's a lost pet or if it's a
no,
pet.
I think from the way it has a little frowny face on the end, I think it's more put to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, that's always awful, and you know, whether it's a dog that's passed away or a cat that's passed away, I'll add a disclaimer here. Pretty much every time I say dog, I may be referring to cats as well, or when it's an animal that's gone missing, those can be really heartbreaking for people, and I've been through it myself. I mentioned my own old dog a few moments ago, and he was a dog that I'd had since high school and who'd been with me through high school, college, vet school, and about 6 years of my career. And it leaves a big hole. To some extent, the resources you have available at that point are similar to any other grieving, I think. You know, some people may need counseling and that sort of thing. You know, part of it is just remembering those good years and you know, focusing on that. If the question was about a missing pet, you know, certainly stay in touch with the SPCA. That's where a lot of these animals end up. And most veterinarians are happy to put up, I don't want to say happy, but we'll happily put up signs if you have them, just to try and keep the alert out there. That's never easy. Yeah.
I'm going back to that question. I feel confident that it was more of a old dog or whatever age animal being put to sleep, because it says expectedly and unexpectedly,
right.
I think your dog wouldn't go missing expectedly.
Yeah. No, sure. The other...
what can the friend do?
Yeah.
Or the family? I mean, because whether it's expectedly because you know that the dog is aged,
right,
as opposed to finding out that suddenly your dog is acting, I believe the word used earlier was quirky.
Sure.
And what it is that's a health reason that the animal is best off most comfortably ending life now rather than suffering through the problem.
And that's a very difficult thing for people to deal with. I mean, when we're dealing with euthanasia, which is something we have available to us in veterinary medicine, and it really does allow us to focus our efforts on quality of life rather than just length of it. But it does put owners in the position of making that decision. And to some extent, hopefully you have a good relationship with whoever your veterinarian is and trust them to help guide you through it. But nothing ever makes it easy. And even in cases where you're absolutely sure it's the proper decision, it can still be awful to make that choice. And I am a veterinarian, and I certainly grappled with that when I made that choice for my own dog. You know, it does take a little bit of just emotionally and mentally preparing yourself, and again, kind of getting back to what I said earlier, focusing on the good years you had and not that awful point at the end, which is unfortunately the price you pay to have these animals in your life is eventually you know that you're going to be dealing with that.
Is there whether it's Georgetown Veterinary mm-hmm. or others throughout the
sure.
area, are you familiar with any sort of group? I mean, you talked about counseling.
Sure.
And I think we're all aware that there are human mm-hmm. groups,
yeah.
and I keep falling back to that word
I
with
know.
Lazarus in the room,
yeah.
That because this program, Wake Up Call, has done shows on suicide mm-hmm. and other issues where there is some sort of 12-step program or gathering to talk about and share your problems and get comfort from
sure.
others. Are you aware of any that fall into this zone for this concern?
They do exist. I'll be honest, at the moment, I can't think of a name of one offhand. They do exist. And those can be valuable, certainly, you know, speaking with other people that have been through it, you know. To some extent, I mean, it's an unfortunately common experience. I think a lot of people do know other people that have been through this, and you know, hopefully you can find friends and family that have experienced it before and have someone to talk to and see how they coped with it and dealt with it. You know, having seen many people go through it over the past years that I've been doing this, everyone handles it their own way. You know, some people never have a pet again. Other people have another puppy running around, you know, days later. And I think for each person, there's a different way of managing those feelings and dealing with it. Yeah.
All right. A question that came in as an instant message again, mm-hmm. WNRN studio for the instant message. Dial us up by phone, 979-0919, mm-hmm. 877-WNRN-ROCKS, toll-free, Dr. Mike Feetz. Please talk about pet health insurance. Is it a good idea, and what does it cover?
What it covers will depend on the individual policy, and whether it's a good idea will depend on the individual dog. I know that sounds like a dodge, but I have quite a few owners that use insurance. Still a pretty stark minority of my clients use insurance, and I've heard stories going in both directions, people that really appreciated having it there and people who have found it to be much more of a hassle than it was worth. Depending on your particular pet and at what stage of its life you're getting insurance, you may find that there are different things that are considered pre-existing and not covered. So it's hard to even make a blanket statement of what's covered and what isn't. It really depends on the history of your pet and just where they've been.
And I realize you don't sell pet insurance.
Sure, no, we don't. Yeah.
So is it... In your experience, is it a worthwhile thing to consider?
It can be. I've certainly seen cases where people really appreciated having it there. I see that especially in cases of, you know, otherwise healthy large breed dogs that suddenly blow out their ACL or, you know, athletic injuries like that. It can be really devastating. They can be expensive to fix, but otherwise you've got a perfectly healthy and happy dog. And in those cases, people really do seem to appreciate having it there. I think statistically, it it turns out that insurance usually costs more, but than not having it. But there's clearly huge exceptions to that, and you know, otherwise, if you're on the fence about doing it, there's always the option, and it takes a little bit of planning and willpower to do it. You know, figuring out what would be your monthly payment on insurance anyway, and kind of setting it aside as a rainy day fund for the dog if needed. So, you know, there's always options to do it that way.
Talking about sort of having a dog or a puppy from the beginning.
Yeah.
Can you tell somebody who's considering? I have a sister who's, you know, my youngest nephew, who will be here in a few weeks as we do the fundraiser, by the way, helping me with the program again. And he's like, you know, I love Lazarus. Can we get a dog, Mom? Can we get a dog, Mom? Can we get a dog, Mom? What's sort of the average cost for having a cat or a dog throughout the year?
I could only guess, honestly. I don't know. I don't want to make up a number. Tough to say. I do think, on average, dogs are probably more expensive than cats. That's probably just a matter of size. But other than that, I'd be reluctant to hazard a guess, honestly.
Which poop is easier to clean up? That was my first decision.
Cats by a mile.
Yeah, but I live in the woods.
Oh, okay.
So I can,
dogs by a mile.
Can go outside, you know, and step off the roadway. All right, Dr. Mike Feetz here answering questions. 979-0919 for yours. Dial up. Lazarus, 10-year-old animal, 10-year-old dog, losing his sight.
Yeah.
When I got him, he was already blind in one eye, and his good, quote, eyesight seems to be diminishing rapidly.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know we've talked about senior dogs for a large section of the hour today.
Yep.
What do you do for an animal that is losing his or her sight?
Yeah, to a large extent, it's just keeping their environment as consistent as you can. Dogs and cats are both remarkably adaptable to problems like this. You know, they deal with it on a different level than we do. I think for them, it's just they just adapt to their new reality and run with it. My own dog that I had mentioned earlier was blind for at least his final year of life, and a lot of it was really just making sure the house was safe for him and making sure it was consistent enough that he knew how to get from one end of it to the other. They just learned to navigate it. Depending on the size dog and what kind of house you have, things like compression baby gates can be useful just to make sure the dog doesn't fall downstairs or hurt themselves. And otherwise, keeping things consistent is really important. I used to feel bad, you know, even if I just left shoes out or something. It's just something for the dog to stumble across because they don't expect it to be there in the middle of the hallway, you know, making sure that open doors stay open and closed doors stay closed so the poor thing doesn't walk right into one. And that's really the big thing. They really do adapt well to it.
11:51 on the wake-up call. In just a few minutes, we will have Drew Thompson in for Les Temps Perdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. He'll have bands like Aztec Camera, Urge Overkill, Concrete Blonde. Brought to you in part by Caliente. Drew Thompson loves requests on Les Temps Perdue. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg with Dr. Mike Feetz today talking about pets. Here's a question about, I have an older dog. Should I get a puppy at this point?
Yes and no. I've seen instances where that goes great. I've had a lot of older dogs where families do add a puppy and it breeds completely new life into them. They're more alert and energetic, and they seem to like having the puppy there. Other older dogs have kind of become a little cantankerous as they've gotten older and don't really need a puppy bouncing in their face every minute of the day. So it really varies a lot depending on the personality of your dog. You know, if you have any friends with puppies, it may be worth doing a little trial run and see how it goes, you know, introduce them and see how they get on. But it does vary case to case. I will say more often than not, it goes well. But it's tough when you don't know in advance, because it's a big commitment to add a puppy just to find out that it's not going to work. So if you have any way of you know, making sure in advance that it's a good idea, that's certainly recommended.
You talk about having the puppy bounce in the older dog's face.
Yeah.
What's the concern about not necessarily the personality mix versus the puppy and the older dog, but about any potential physical problems, you know, with the puppy, you know, bouncing against the older dog who may have arthritis or may not see so well and so therefore moving things around or blocking him into the stairwell, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, and depending on the size disparity, I mean, if you've got a little tiny dog, a little tiny puppy working with a big dog, you know, sometimes just that size mismatch can become a bit of a danger. In most cases, there's not a huge danger. I mean, most dogs are not too likely to get in a major throwdown with each other. You know, you may spook the older dog if he tries to dart down the stairs and hurt himself. I mean, you can envision all sorts of kind of fluke circumstances that can be a problem. But by and large, if you've got a fairly mellow older dog and he's not offended by the presence of a puppy, usually you're in pretty good shape.
Dr. Feeds, here's another question from the instant message that for some reason this one's in a print I can't read very well. Ask the vet if he knows any alternative remedies to cure mange. They're using something called Demodex. Does that make sense to you?
So Demodex is the mange.
Okay.
It's the mange mite itself.
Doesn't want to use Invectrin.
So there's a few different ways of treating mange. They're probably
they've been using borax or hydrogen peroxide sponged on the dog.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on that working very well. Most cases of mange can be treated very easily with an oral medication called ivermectin, which is really what I recommend doing, unless there's a particular reason in that dog not to use it, and there are reasons not to use it. Some dogs can react to that drug. But by and large, no, I don't know of any alternative means of controlling it, even to a degree that's enough to make that dog comfortable and happy again. This is one where we're going medically is probably the best way to go. There are topical ways of doing it, shampoos and so on, that can actually be really hard on the dog, which is one of the reasons I like using ivermectin for the vast majority of dogs. It's a very inexpensive and safe way of managing it, usually that's the way we go.
And I realize that you are a vet at the Georgetown Veterinary Clinic, and so people using homeopathic medications, you know, for lack of a better phrase, that's money out of your pocket.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
But are there some out there that you found to be quite productive or you know, that work quite well?
No, and it's hard to say. You know, we do have a placebo effect in animals. It's hard to explain sometimes. And, you know, certainly people who want to see their animals improving to some extent will. You know, I try and keep my practice evidence-based, and there are studies out there for a lot of these things. And, you know, if studies show that they help, I'm always happy to add a tool to the toolbox. You know, I don't think skepticism carries to the point where you just say no to everything because it's not what you're familiar with. But ultimately, all these things need to prove themselves. And if they do, that's great. And if they don't, you know, just as soon not spend time with it.
Has Georgetown Veterinary Clinic seen an increase in any particular type of problem for cats and dogs? I mean, I know that Lyme's disease has been in the newspapers lately for both humans and for animals. Mm-hmm. But are there other problems, diseases, infections that you've seen?
Of late, I can't say we've had any major spikes. There have been a decent number of rabies cases in the area, but luckily, by and large, and with proper vaccination, we haven't seen that to be a huge problem in domestic animals and pets, although I have seen some cases, which is always unfortunate. Otherwise, no, I can't say at the moment we're in the throes of any particular epidemic. It's never know when one's going to pop up, but at the moment, no, things seem pretty calm at the moment.
All right. One of the last questions for Dr. Feeds today. When you go to training a dog, we talked about a puppy coming into the house. We talked earlier about whether or not to decoy a cat because it was trashing your furniture. Right. Are there things that you can do at home, or is this something that you need to go to one of these businesses or individuals who that's their specialty?
I think it depends on the severity of the problem and how ready you feel to deal with it.
Well, if you've got a cat that's trashing your furniture, or you have a puppy that might be a little overactive in a house that has an older dog and, you know, jumping on them when they get excited to go outside or et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, a professional trainer can always be of use and often really helpful. You know, I think I do have a lot of clients that have a very good handle on training, but it's one of those things where an individual dog may just respond to one thing better than another. So if you find yourself frustrated, you know, rather than just getting frustrated and throwing in the towel, then certainly, you know, looking for professional training opportunities may well be a good idea.
All right. Our show today, Dr. Mike Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Clinic. Thank you so much, sir.
Anytime.
I appreciate you coming in on your long weekend off.
That's okay. There's still plenty of it left.
Georgetown Vet Clinic will be open back again on Tuesday as they enjoy the Labor Day weekend like many others. I hope you do as well, whether working or not working. Please enjoy your day. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.